better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's the first show of the new year, almost. It is New Year's Eve. That's Lunar New Year, of course. And I did what I think you're supposed to do on New Year's Eve. I cleaned my house. I did all kinds of things I haven't done in a long time. And something you should do, there's still time, I think, should put away your knives. Put away your knives, scissors, any other cutting implements, and put them out of sight. You don't want the kitchen god to see them. And then what else? If you want to sweep your porch, do it tonight. Don't sweep tomorrow. And put some candy on your stove for the kitchen god. Now, what does this have to do with anything? You don't want to cut your good luck. You can take those that comes to you at the beginning of the new year. This is the year of the ox. So you don't want that kitchen god to get like freaked out at those knives and scissors. So put them away. So I can't see him. You can take him out Tuesday morning. Same with sweeping. You don't want to sweep out the good luck of the new year. And the kitchen god has a sweet tooth. So that's why you want to put candy on the stove. There's all kinds of things. You can go as far into Lunar New Year as you like. But I do those. I like rituals. And it's sort of a second chance at the start of a new year. And I almost always need that. I have to say, this week has been pretty good, hasn't it? It's amazing. I hear the news and, you know, the reporter will start to say the word president and I can feel my body get all stiff. And then they say someone else's name and it's like, wow, we have a president who's not an idiot. What a happy thing. So I think the year of the ox is getting off to a really, really good start. And I hope that you're enjoying it as well. I have guests this evening that I wanted to have on Mouthful for a long time. We have Todd Humphreys of Martini House in San Lena, along with Rob Renteria, who is the wine director of Martini House. And there are many things I love about this place. One of them is the use of lights outside. It's all twinkly and stuff, but it's not overdone. It feels a little bit like, feels kind of like a cantina when you first see it, rather than sort of overdone Disneyland where every light is like measured and perfect in relationship to the next light. So I love the feel when I turn around, when I turn onto the street and say, ah, it's Martini House. I know I'm in for a good time. Also, the last time I was there, so was the director of all four Killer Tomato movies. We watched, I think it was the Killer Tomatoes That Ate France on screen outside. We had a menu that went along with it, and you just have to love a restaurant that is willing to show movies that silly. And on that note, Todd, welcome to Mouthful.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Welcome, Maud. I really appreciate both of you coming over
here
across the mountain.
Thanks for having us.
So how are things over at Martini House?
Great. We're doing a lot of fun things over there right now.
Yeah, you started this new family dinner thing.
Family meal. Rob kind of came up with the idea. I think it was in September. We were tossing around. We always brainstorm what can we do next, and then we didn't really do anything. And as the economy, you know, started going down, we started talking about it again. And then I just, you know, discussed it with Rob and my staff, and we said, hey, let's do family meal, which is staff meal.
Mm-hmm. That is the staff generally eat together.
Yeah.
Just before you
we
open.
We set up a table out in the arbor generally. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are standing up around the restaurant because we're not open, and the kitchen puts up the food and the service staff puts up the beverages and the plates and things like mm-hmm. that. So I just said all of a sudden, okay, Monday through Thursday, 5 to 6:30, I'm going to serve staff meal to the public. And you can get it to go. You can call in and say, hey, what's for family meal? And it's posted on our website. Mm-hmm. And you can see what we're doing. Every Saturday it'll be posted for the next week, Monday through Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And what's the cost?
The entree, it's a great plate of food. $10 to $14 has been the...
Which is a great price.
Really the most expensive, I think, has been $12. Uh-huh. And then each one is paired with either a short Papa Hops, which is a half beer, which is $3. Mm-hmm. Or Rob comes up. We had Veal Blanquette last week, and mm-hmm. he had a great local Chardonnay from Melanson for $8 for a nice big glass mm-hmm. of wine.
Yeah, even the wines are discounted.
Yeah.
The wines are too. That's great.
So it's almost kind of like a food happy hour mm-hmm. because it's from 5 to 6:30. So you know, we just kind of lowered the prices of some wines that we normally have by the glass and, it's a pretty nice discount mm-hmm. as it is, and seems to work so far. Uh-huh. It's made for better family meals for the staff, that's uh-huh. for sure.
How many, because it's first come, first serve, right? Mm-hmm. No reservations.
Yep, correct.
How many people can you feed in addition to your staff?
The busiest night has been about, 25, okay. 30 people uh-huh. down there.
It takes place in the cellar.
Yeah.
Which is I like eating in the cellar.
Yeah, the cellar's a great place to be. Yeah. And a lot of people are calling in now and saying, hey, give me two family meals to go. So locals who frequent have found out about the to-go, and mm-hmm. and it's kind of fun. The other thing about it, I think, is as we slowed down a little bit, and I had some staff that left, and I started cooking family meal, and it's given me an opportunity to kind of cook other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had pho bo, Vietnamese beef noodle
soup. I saw that on your...
A couple times, and I always wanted to make that, and uh-huh. I never have. And then I just read up on it and mm-hmm. started doing that. And so it gives us, there's some ethnic things in there. Mm-hmm. And then also some of my kitchen staff, if they want to do something, we had Wild Willie's Texas chili, or not, it was Wild Willie's chili bowl.
Yeah.
And so he made mm-hmm. that, and so people are...
Yeah, Nick's meatballs.
Nick's spicy meatballs with his family's secret tomato sauce. He's one of my sous chefs, uh-huh. and they were fabulous.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Now, did you have a tradition at all of any to-go food before this?
Not really, but people will always ask for our cream of mushroom soup to go, and we'll do it, uh-huh. And so now it's kind of taking on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. There'll be certain things available to go, our mushroom soup, and we make some charcuterie and, mm-hmm. and terrines and things like that we're going to be offering to go. And people do ask for food to go, and some of it doesn't travel, so...
Sure.
We're going to come up with a small menu that'll be mm-hmm. posted on our website under cuisine, and then all our menus are posted there and updated.
Yeah, you have a
daily.
Good website. It's current. And as someone who's doing a lot of research all of the time, it's very nice to find food and wine websites that are current.
Thank you.
It's very helpful. There's an interesting history to Martini House and why it's called Martini House. You want to talk about that?
The home was owned by Walter Martini, and he was a local celebrity in town. He ran the William Tell Hotel, and story goes he sang with Caruso, apparently, and he was a local bootlegger, We found a lot of bottles under the stairs when we renovated the house.
Now, what had been happening with the house when you read it? And it was you and Pat Coletto?
Correct.
And what year did you begin the renovations?
2001. Okay. We opened September 21st, 2001. Wow. Probably about 8 months before we had started.
So you opened at that really shaky time, too.
And it was Spring Street Restaurant prior, and it had been shuttered for, I think, a couple years prior to that. And we got in and opened the restaurant. And we were, you know, it was a funny time after September 11th and very concerned about that. But, you know, a lot of people came to the restaurant, and we were super busy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for from lunch the beginning.
And dinner from the beginning.
You know, a restaurant opened in Sebastopol just... Well, they opened in early October 2001, and even though several restaurants closed in Sebastopol, they just didn't have, right, you know, 2001 came, or 9/11 came, you know, business went down, and then K&L Bistro opened, and they've been busy since the beginning. They just, people warmed to them right away.
Oh, that's great.
So it sounds like this is something similar happened with Martini House.
For sure.
So it took about 8 months to do the renovations, and you found, what, old bottles from...
Yeah, underneath, and we completely took the whole place apart inside and made a nice staircase, and really the cellar is really... I mean, there's different areas, and the cellar is really a great spot to be, and then the dining room upstairs is very comfortable and almost like somebody's home living room, and the chairs are great. Then we have our outdoor dining. Out in the garden or under the
really
arbor.
In a really nice garden. It's beautiful.
And around the pond. So there's a lot of different areas in the restaurant.
And who do you have mostly? Do you have a big mix of local and visitors? Do you have mostly local?
I would say, you know, in the winter months, there's a lot of locals that frequent the restaurant, whether they're in the cellar or upstairs. A lot of tourists. Come in, a lot of people in the wine industry doing business or, it's a good mix of people, I think.
Yeah, in the wintertime, it's weird. I just spoke to a local the other day, and he was saying that he's usually around for 3 months, and then for 9 months, he's he's gone. And it's weird because in the wintertime, the cellar really takes the life of its own, and that's when a lot of locals seem to be coming back out, and you know, there's a weird feeling towards the tourism that frequents Napa Valley and whatnot.
Sure.
But it's, I don't think people really quite realize how much of an integral part that it is, you know, of the industry.
It's so important. I've been around Napa my whole life. My mother was born there, and my younger daughter were born there, and I know the evolution of Napa and the tourism is what has allowed so much to exist, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, we have like one customer who's a regular, this guy Herb, and sometimes when he comes upstairs, he's always in the bar. It sounds wrong, but I mean, he's always in the cellar and, you know, having his...
He's never even been upstairs.
Yeah, no, and sometimes when he does come upstairs, we ask him, what's going on? Are you lost? You know? it's kind of like the groundhog.
Actually, I don't think I've ever had dinner upstairs.
No, a lot of people...
I've only been downstairs or outside.
So there really is that, there is that really, really weird dichotomy in which people prefer the downstairs area, and sometimes we'll never even go upstairs, but it's nice because the downstairs area is really flexible as far as menus are concerned, because we have our cellar bar menu, and then we also have our dinner menu as well, which is, you know, so you really have this nice you know, choices and that you can make and so forth, and it really is, as Chef was saying, it's a really, you know, to be there year round and to see the changes that take place, because in the summer everyone wants to sit out on the patio. You know, that's where it's happening, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, I love that front patio too. I love the cantina lights. I just love it. It makes me feel a little bit like I'm in Mexico. I just love that look of cantina lights. But then I'm getting
festoon lights.
Yeah. Okay. I just think of them as cantina lights. Yeah. But
similar, I guess.
Yeah. I just love that feeling. But, you know, I love the food I get, you know. I just love the combination of you know, both those feelings. So it's one of my favorite places. You're listening to Mouthful. We're talking about Martini House in St. Helena.
Everybody loves somebody sometime. Everybody falls in love somehow. Something in your kiss just told me my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying my someplace is here.
Dean Martin, it's Mouthful. Thanks for sticking with us, and happy Lunar New Year, Year of the Ox. We are talking with Todd Humphreys and Rob Renteria, who is the wine director. You became a mushroom forager.
Yes.
It says in your press release.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was that specifically because of Martini House and
no.
what you wanted to do? So you did that before?
When I used to work in New York at a restaurant called L'Espinasse in the St. Regis, which is now closed. But I used to take care of all the truffles and all the mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
We used to can truffles. We had a fantastic risotto dish, and we had all kinds of mushrooms that we got from Odalis de Bois, the mushroom company.
Sure.
It's a French guy. And I ordered them, and I just loved mushrooms. I loved the taste. I always have. And I went mushroom hunting a few times in upstate New York. Ended up moving to San Francisco, where I became the chef at Campton Place, and met a lady named Connie Green from Wine Forest Mushrooms, and started buying mushrooms from her. And she organized some forays out to the coast, and I decided to go one time, and with my wife Amelia, and went out there. It was completely torrential rains, and she said, "Do you guys want to go?" And I said, yeah, absolutely. So we were out in pouring rain looking for mushrooms, and we kept going back out. And I just love going, finding mushrooms, and I love cooking them. And that's kind of how I got going on it. And I've been friends with Connie for probably 15 years now. And another friend, Patrick Hamilton, who... I go mushroom hunting also, and I've learned a great deal about foraging and from him and Connie.
So how have you been out this year?
You know, I've only been out really a couple times. Usually I go for porcinis for a week over Thanksgiving, and I did not go this year for the first time in a long time. Had to be at the restaurant. But in up in Napa Valley, we went out. We usually go out on the 25th of December and January 1st with my two boys and my wife, and we went for matsutakes three or four times, and that's about the extent of my mushroom hunting this year, sadly to say.
The reason I ask is, you know, we're in a drought cycle, and
yeah.
so I'm wondering how it's looking out there with mushrooms.
Well, porcinis didn't do so well. I'm not sure right now about the winter mushrooms, but we did really well with matsutakes. Also, my chef de cuisine, Chris Litz, loves mushroom hunting, and he came back and said, "You got to go." He had big bags, and we, in fact, picked about 30 pounds
of which?
Matsutake.
Matsutake, do they have another name?
Pine mushroom.
Pine mushroom, okay.
Yeah.
Pine mushroom. What about maitake? Is that something you gather? Because they're hen of the woods, right?
Yeah, they're also a cultivated mushroom.
They are. I was wondering, because I just bought some at the farmer's market, and the people I bought them from were not able, you know, they didn't speak English well enough to really explain.
I think they grow wild on the East Coast, but I've never picked hen of the woods before.
Because I have a current fascination with hen of the woods. I really love
fabulous
them.
Fabulous mushroom.
Yeah. What about shaggy mane? Have you ever gotten any shaggy manes out here?
I have only eaten those. A friend of ours, Mike Boom, who we go mushroom hunting with, brought some that were dried.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could dry them.
And they made a stuffing for Thanksgiving for the turkey.
Wow.
And I have picked a couple up in Angwin before. Uh-huh. And I wasn't 100% sure, so I didn't eat those.
Okay, yeah. I've only had them twice. Mm-hmm. I've had people get a little knock at the door early in the morning a couple of times, and they've been standing there. I just couldn't resist coming by.
Yeah, they're very fragile.
They auto-digest, and right. So they just start turning to ink really quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
But, man, when you get them, they are so very good.
Yeah, I've only had them dried, like I said. So.
Yeah, I've only had them fresh those two times, and they taste to me, they sort of taste like the absolute perfect thought form of a poached egg.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like saute them real quickly in some butter.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. And that's what they resembled to me, was a poached egg.
Wow.
Anyway, what are you doing right now at the at Martini House with mushrooms?
Well, we're using using candy cap mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dessert that's been on for quite a while. My pastry chef, Jen Archer, put together a candy cap bread pudding with a maple syrup and glaze, which is fabulous. We're using a lot of black trumpets, hedgehogs, mm-hmm. and yellowfoot in a kind of a purple organic barley risotto, which we get from Montana, which is really good.
Purple organic barley.
Yeah.
It's I'm a big fan of barley, but that is not one I've had.
We make a risotto with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we make a really rich mushroom stock and, you know, butter and Parmesan cheese, and that's delicious also. We also use cultivated mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
which I love a lot. Button mushrooms, you know, have a really great flavor.
Mm-hmm.
We also make a portobello burger, which it's not just a cap. One day I was thinking about making a mushroom burger, and so what we do is we started brining mushrooms in a wet brine.
Mm-hmm.
Maitake, by the way, we did that also.
Oh, really?
Because you're having a hard time seasoning it because it's so mm-hmm. feathery, and so I put it in a. I had the idea to put it in a wet brine, and the you know, there's salt in that, so it kind of softens the mushroom mm-hmm. and seasons it all the way through.
How long do you leave it in the brine?
Overnight.
Overnight?
24 hours, mm-hmm. and then you drain it. But we did this with portobellos, and then the next day we grilled them. We drained them, and then we grilled them to cook them through, and then we kind of put them in a container so they steam through,
mm-hmm.
and then we grind them through a meat grinder so they resemble ground beef,
uh-huh.
and then we put a cheesecloth and we press, excuse me, out the liquid. And then we heat that liquid and we add agar-agar, which is a,
mm-hmm. It's a seaweed. Yeah.
But it can be heated and it doesn't melt. And we mix back in the ground portobello and it's set, cut it into a burger shape, and then we can heat it. And we make a little ground burger.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
It's pretty
and
good.
And then do you serve it just like a burger?
Yeah, we have little brioche buns, mm-hmm. and we make a mushroom, creamy mushroom duxelle that's mm-hmm. served over top.
It sounds really good.
Yeah, it's become pretty popular.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the mushroom tasting menu.
Uh-huh.
And then more about the sliders as well. In the
mushroom sliders.
Yeah, mushroom slider, which is in the cellar. And actually, those are really popular. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's amazing. It's I know they're pretty rich, but they're still vegetarian.
That doesn't usually stop people. Yeah, it is one of the richer things for vegetarians. And I just forgot what I was going to say. So we'll come back to mushrooms. Unless, do you need a coughing break? You sound like you
I've
have the cough
break.
I had
Thank
last
you.
Week. We had to take a longer music break than usual because I couldn't quit coughing. I want to talk about killer tomatoes.
Okay.
As you know, if all you do is read the press of Martini House and your bio and Pat Coletto, who has, you know, really sterling reputation for high-end restaurants,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't really make the association with Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. So how did those two worlds meet at Martini House?
Well, we were doing a tomato. We've done a tomato menu for quite a few mm-hmm. years now.
You did that, what, in August?
Yeah. Second or third week, and it's kind of foggy how it came about, I think. Rob,
what, Attack of the Killer.
Yeah, we're
our best ideas come on Fridays when we have when we have manager, meetings, and I think one of them was I had always envisioned just this, you know, because of the we talked about the lawn and the patio area, and I had worked at a restaurant in San Francisco where we always thought about doing theme nights based around movies and so forth, but never really got off the ground and so forth. So on this particular day, I think we just kind of said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we, you know, showed Attack of the Killer Tomatoes out on the lawn? And, you know, it would just be, you know, table of, you know, some rounds of 40, you know, to accommodate 40 people, and, you know, just have this movie play, but it doesn't really make any sense other than it's about tomatoes, and that kind of ties into that. And then, you know, the chef went for it. I know what turned out to be just kind of, you know, just kicking around some ideas and just having fun. It's turned into three or four now, I think. So it's the first time. It was good. It was great. And some people, you know, actually came to see the movie, you know, and which was odd. And then, you know, and I think the first one that we had was with Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And
That seemed kind of perfect, really perfect
combination.
Yeah, it seemed pretty good at the time. Mm-hmm. He's a real quiet guy, though. So
he's quiet, but you know that inside his brain is just screaming all kinds
of stuff.
Especially
if you look at his website, right?
Yeah.
Or his newsletters, my God.
Yeah, but it turns out, like, the director came.
Right. I know he was at the one I was at in August.
Yeah.
And I had actually, I confess, I had only seen the first one. I didn't know that there were three more. I thought there was only one more.
I don't think we did either.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Any of it?
Well, I came out after the first one and sat with some friends and saw a little bit of the end, but that's...
It's the movie that made me see Jaws, because, you know, Jaws, you know, I normally wouldn't see a movie like that, but I'd heard enough about Jaws that when I saw Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, I knew that I needed to have the experience of Jaws, because there's this opening scene where there's the shadow of a woman swimming, and, you know, the orientation of the camera is under the water, and that's a famous shot. And then I don't even remember, but the shark comes and, you know, turns red. Well, in this, there's all these little tomatoes coming up towards the woman. It's just a total send-up of Jaws. It's hilarious. It's my favorite part of all that I've seen.
We'll do a movie and show Jaws and do...
Oh, God, you could just...
your shark steak as an entree.
Yeah,
not
and you
PC,
could...
but...
Yeah. Oh, no, and you could have some sort of either tartare... Carpaccio.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You could have a blast.
Chicken wings or,
you know, there's just one of the things that I like so much about Martini House is there's just too much seriousness around good food. You know, there's restaurants I won't mention, but, you know, the waiters, you cannot get them to smile. They wait staff. You can't get them to smile, and they want everyone to be quiet. So, because some people like to enjoy their food in silence. It's like, no, I want to see Attack of the Killer Tomatoes while I'm eating something really, really good.
Oh, what delight to be given the right to be carefree and gay once again. No longer slinking, respectively drinking like civilized ladies and men.
No longer need we miss a charming scene like this in some secluded rendezvous that overlooks the avenue with someone sharing a delight, chat, this and that, and cocktails for two.
Another martini, anyone? I could use my first of the day.
Yeah.
Do you have absinthe on the menu?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Popular?
It's getting popular. It's
Which one do you have? St. George, the hangar one?
Yes, yeah, we have the St. George, the local one that's made over out in there in Alameda.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, our bar managers have been pretty hip to, you know, trends and not trends, but changes and so forth.
Wow,
and
it's suddenly legal. Let's serve it.
Well, I mean, we actually had a guy come in the other day and ordered a drink that was part of a, it was a real seasonal drink, and we hadn't had it for a year, and he ordered it, and we had a new bartender. Mm-hmm. They had no idea what the hell he was talking about. But
it's like the Moscow Mule.
The what?
Moscow Mule.
But yeah, you know, there's you know, just like anything, you know, absinthe and is pretty popular, and other digestives, you know, Verna. What's the one I always drink? Fernet Branca.
Fernet Branca, yeah.
Zwack, which is from Hungary. It's pretty good stuff. So we've actually thought about doing a flight of that.
Uh-huh.
Which would be kind of nice.
Yeah, it sounds good.
The final flight.
Yeah, I just I like so much that absinthe is available and that more and more brands are out there. So I always like to know if somebody's serving it. So Wine Geeks and what's that menu?
Mushroom Freaks.
Okay. And when does that take place?
Well, we've had several of them over the years. It kind of came about one night. Jeff?
Yeah, Mr. Anderson.
I said, you're just a wine geek. And I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. I'm going to get in trouble. He's going to. And then I said, hey, Wine Geeks and Mushroom Freaks. And so that kind of took a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And we've had, I think, about five of them. Mm-hmm. The next one will be in Morel season.
Oh, uh-huh.
It's not on our calendar of events on our website yet, but it will be soon. So we've done a number of them. We've done Porcini, we've done the winter mushrooms, we've done morels, and then we've just done, you know, I can't even remember. There's been about five, I guess.
Yeah, there's been about five, and it's a nice way because then what we'll do is we'll work with different wineries or different regions, and so it's a nice way to have a wine dinner without it having to be a typical wine dinner, which is to say, you know, that, you know, the winemaker gets up and talks about each wine and so forth. This is really laid back, in which, you know, Connie and Patrick will come, and then we have the wine geek and
mushroom table.
So the wine geeks and the mushroom people eat at the same table, and, you know, gives them a chance to, you know, meet each other and talk about whatever, you know, and then if somebody has the menu in the restaurant, then, you know, we let them know that both, you know, the Wine Geek and the Mushroom Freak people are here, and they're, you know, would they like to come, you know, would they like to meet them and so forth. They can either say yes or no. So it's really laid back that way. And it's great because winemakers or the wine people themselves really like it, because it's a different alternative wine dinner for them.
Yeah, where it gives a nice context.
Yeah.
So it's worked out. It's worked out well, and Patrick likes it. He always shows up.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about the wine list, wine program, whatever you call it, and how you make that work. I think that most people sit down, they see a wine list, they look for something familiar or that they can either pronounce or afford, and they don't know what's gone into creating, like, why is it put together this way? How does it happen that something's on the wine list?
Sure. Well, when I first started at Martini House about 3.5 years ago, the restaurant had already been there for maybe 3 years and so forth, and there were some, you know, really talented wine people that were there before me. But the biggest thing that I wanted to change was the format of the list. At that time, it was listed by varietals, and which is great. I don't mind that. But, you know, for instance, if you only have one wine that is, like, say, Falanghina, then as a consumer, my natural – question would be, well, you know, how come you only have one Falanghina, you know, based wine? So that was the biggest thing that I wanted to do. That was the first priority. I wanted to come in and change the format of the list. And I wanted to have something that was an easy read, something that was engaging, something that was fun. So at the time, myself and my assistant at the time, Amanda Reed, who's moved on to New York, but we worked really well together. She had a great sense of humor, and she was really technical with a computer, which was great. Mm-hmm. So and I'm not. So it was nice to be able to, you know, just outline everything that I wanted to do and give her, you know, tell her to just, you know, make it happen. And this is what I want you to work on, and come back at me when it's finished. And when it was, and it was great. And we were able to, you know, have a sense of humor to it. And so that was the format. Mm-hmm. And then
how did you reorganize it?
Well, you know, there were some pages on the list that were already in existence, that had already gotten a lot of fanfare, had gotten a lot of press and so forth. There's a Women Winemakers page. Mm-hmm. Women Winemakers, we love. I couldn't get rid of that. I wouldn't
got in love with any of them.
Yeah, secretly maybe, but you know, you know, but you know, you can't. I would have gotten run out of town. Mm-hmm. You know, this misogynist or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that stayed. There was another page, a biodynamic page, and so that stayed. And as I said, all my predecessors had written things, different portions of the list, had added and so forth.
But when you when it went to reorganize, it was organized primarily by varietal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
So
yeah,
right, where did the Pinot Noirs go, for example?
So what I wanted to do, so essentially to, you know, basically deconstructed the list and then put it back together, and you kind of say, okay, well, what is it that we have? So I'm a pretty simple person. So when I tried to put it based on what I would want. So for instance, when people think of Italian wines, they're not going to necessarily, unless they're really geeky about it, they're not going to think about varietals. They're just going to look for Italian whites and reds. And then you can break that up by category, like Tuscany or Piedmont or other Italian regions. And that's kind of what I did with the reds and the whites. And
so you went more
Spanish
by appellation?
By appellations and some varietals as well. It really flows, actually, without, you know, it starts out as varietals, Sauvignon Blancs, and then that's broken up with regions, and then it moves on to like something like, you know, other American whites, Germany, Austria, Alsace, you know, those kind of, you know, regions and varietals, right? You know, and then let's see, what else did I do? Pinot Noir has its own page. Burgundy has its own page. You know, I think people, you know, specifically will go towards Burgundy, you know, knowing that the varietals are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, at least hopefully.
I think so too.
You know, Cabernet obviously gets its own page. Bordeaux gets its own little thing, Southern Hemisphere. So it's a weird combination of varietals and regions, and just kind of interspersed and whatnot, based on really nothing other than what I think is, you know, how I refer to, you know, what I want to look for.
Do you feel any pressure to have a lot of Napa wines on?
None whatsoever.
Cool. That was
it's interesting. I mean, for instance, you know, when I moved from San Francisco to take the position, you know, I was always drawn to the restaurant and the list was the list itself. It was a really international list. I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, I can fine tune it and so forth. It's a great restaurant. You know, I mean, it's chef's food and so forth. I've eaten there many times. And in San Francisco, it's easy because you're really at arm's length from both, you know, Napa producers, Sonoma producers. You don't really need to, know, if you don't like someone's wine, you just say, you know, thanks for your time, and you know, you necessarily don't see them. And naively, I kind of had that attitude when I first got there, and that lasted about maybe 2 months. And then, so yeah, there's a lot of politics. There's you know, the same person who you just said no to, you're going to see the next day at the market, but it's just like anything. You really you want to work with people who are going to support you, and vice versa, and but ultimately, it's got to be about the wine.
I agree.
It has to be. Yeah, you know?
I was talking with Kevin Cronin. You probably know Kevin. Yeah, here at Rosso now. And we were talking about how he put this wine list together, and he said people had told him, "You better not have anything except Sonoma County wines when you do this." And he thought about it. He said, "That's not what I want to do." And he said, "Everybody has just been really interested in the wine list. Nobody's given him a hard time about it." Yeah. So it was much easier than he expected it to
be. I've heard the same thing.
I think especially, that are up here, unless you're just an idiot, you know, it's like we have a world of wine.
Yeah. That's always been my philosophy. I mean, I've had the good fortune to travel to other wine regions, and I think anytime it's an agricultural business, first and foremost, and farming, and you know, wine is the byproduct of that. And you go to other wine regions, and they look the same, and and good food and great food and great wine, you know, should pay homage to not just that particular wine region, but others as well. And that's been kind of my philosophy. Mm-hmm. It seems to work out well. And then once again, going back to our clientele, they're pretty wine savvy. You know, a lot of people have traveled quite a bit, and after, you know, not a slight to Napa wines, but a lot of times their palates are burned out, and maybe they're ready for, you know, something like German Riesling or Burgundy.
I mean, Napa does
whatnot. And
what Napa does, it does really well.
And we have a lot of Sonoma wines on the list too, actually. So it's weird. People don't. I've heard stories about being real provincial and so forth. I can't speak.
I keep hoping
firsthand
as we grow
Sonoma.
Up more, you know, that will diminish. And it seems as if it might be.
It's fairly, the attitudes are fairly liberal, and what's interesting is that, and I mean, hats off to Chef too. I mean, he gives me a long leash to be able to do what it is I do with the list, but I mean, we can have all kinds of weird stuff, and the locals really are the ones that support it, because I mean, they're around their own wines every day, and they really want to try other things and so forth, and they don't necessarily want to travel far to get it. So, I mean, the same wines, that you can maybe get at a restaurant in San Francisco and so forth, they can get here. It's nice. And even the local market, Sunshine Market, that's next to us, I mean, he really feeds off of our list as well. I mean, he'll see a lot of stuff. He comes in, tastes wines. We talk about where I got it. He'll put it on his shelf. And so there's a nice
resonance.
It's great. It's a really nice symbiotic relationship that we've been able to establish with not just the wineries, but the local businesses as well.
Cool. Are you noticing anything that's sort of a coming? I hate to use the word trend, but are you noticing some varietals, some countries, some styles on the horizon that you think we're going to be hearing more about?
Well, I mean, I think right now, you know, there's always shifts, and I think the biggest shift right now is based on economics. You know, you're starting to see, I think, more and more people are paying attention to other regions, like, you know, Southern Hemisphere regions, South Africa, South American, Chile, Argentina. Not so much Australia these days. Maybe New Zealand is still fairly hot. Pinot Noir is still really king.
What about alcohol levels? Are you seeing more and more interest in wanting to get lower? Lower alcohol wines?
Yeah, you're starting to see that now. I have anyways. It's weird. It's real. It's, you know, the biggest thing, like, for instance, would be Chardonnay. You know, Chardonnay you know, the biggest trend now is people are using less oak, less malolactic fermentation.
That's such a good trend too.
It's a great, it's a great trend, but it's really schizophrenic. Uh-huh. You know? So what happens is that it's getting harder and harder to find more obvious types of wine that a Chardonnay drinker will like, uh-huh, because they
big
can't
and buttery isn't,
yeah,
isn't
it's really
ubiquitous anymore.
Chardonnay drinkers are great. I love them, but they're really hard to please, mm-hmm, at times. But I think but right now, it's all cost driven. I think, mm-hmm, still the more wines that you're going to see on lists are based on some of these other regions, outside the United States anyways, that are, you know, anywhere on lists from, mm-hmm, $40 to $50 to $60, yeah, you know, around there, if that's where it's at. And then on a, local level, you're starting to see a lot of weird quasi blends. You're starting to see a lot of, mm-hmm, Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet, Merlot, being blended with.
I saw Cabernet Syrah.
Yeah, you're starting to see a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I blended a wine for myself, and it's Merlot and Sangiovese. And go figure. You know, it's kind of super Tuscan,
mm-hmm.
But you know, but I, you're starting to see that, and I think it's just because straight varietals themselves are becoming so expensive. I mean, mm-hmm. Cabernet, mm-hmm, at the end of the day, is still a very expensive grape to,
yeah,
work with.
And Pinot Noirs, geez, they're pretty high.
Yeah, and
for the
no one, yeah, no one
ones
in their right mind is going to, you know, blend Pinot Noir and Cabernet. And so that's a varietal that's going to, yeah, stand on its own. But there's a lot of Syrah, and Syrah is a great varietal, but it's also, mm-hmm, a great varietal that you can blend with,
yeah,
as well. And I think that you're starting to see that.
Mm-hmm. What about on the food end of things, Todd? You've seen trends, just anything on the horizon. For a while, I thought that we're not going to see any more foam. Foam is out. Yay. And then I've been hearing a lot about foam lately, and it's like, well, maybe foam's not out. But anything like that, any shifts in interest? Comfort foods, certainly in part because you always see comfort foods at this time of year, but also the economy, there's more talk of comfort foods. But from a chef's point of view, are you seeing?
Well, I think, I mean, there's, I mean, a lot of experimenting going on, mm-hmm, out there. At Martini House, I mean, we are pretty grounded in local, seasonal.
Food, yeah. And pretty, you're not like fussy. The food's pretty lusty at Martini House.
I like it to taste really good, uh-huh, and presentation second, and trying to work with a lot of local people and, mm-hmm, and keep the integrity of the food. I mean, we've experimented a little bit with, you know, some of the, like, agar-agar and, mm-hmm, and a few different things. I've never made a foam. I've thought about it, but it just doesn't.
Oh, don't.
we just haven't. I mean, we use a hand blender to froth our sauces, uh-huh, which I've been doing for years,
yeah,
which is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, right now in this economy, I think comfort food is, mm-hmm, is kind of coming back and around for people. And, you know, when you go out to eat, I think it's great to try a lot of the experimental food, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's a different experience,
mm-hmm,
that people will go and pay for and go, wow, that was really inventive, creative. But,
mm-hmm,
I think at the end of the day, people want to come in and they'll return to local, good, well-prepared food.
Yeah, it sounds like
belief.
They keep returning for the mushroom soup.
Yeah.
Will you tell us about that?
The mushroom soup is, it's been on, I took it off one summer about 5 years ago, and we have an open kitchen, and, mm-hmm, this guy kept looking at me in the kitchen from his table, and I was thinking, what's going on? Is there a problem? Finally, he came up to the window, and he said, what are you doing to me, man? I drove an hour here for your mushroom soup. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. I mean, it was like 100 degrees out, and I figured cream of mushroom,
yeah,
soup. But so I put it right back on. We've, uh-huh, never taken it off, and it's the biggest selling thing. And
what mushrooms are in it?
It's button mushrooms.
Button, okay.
Dried porcinis, milk, cream. We make a really rich mushroom stock that, mm-hmm, we add. Marcella wine, onions, mm-hmm, and a little bit of garlic, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
just
pretty straightforward.
Like,
I mean, you just
real mushroom soup.
That's why I love button mushrooms because they have such a great flavor.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we are just about out of time. See, time flies on Mouthful when you're having a good time, doesn't it? So we should give everyone all the contact information. Martini House is located at 1245 Spring Street at Oak. That's just off, that's Highway 29.
Correct, yeah.
So you just turn Highway 29 onto Spring, and there it is.
There it is, the sign and everything.
Yeah, it's old Craftsman building.
MartiniHouse.com is the website, and it really is a good website. The menus are just right there all the time. Chef, are the family meals that you said are on Saturday before the next week?
It's posted on Saturday.
That's posted.
Yeah, from Monday through Thursday.
Reservations essential or recommended?
Recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not essential. Drop-ins if there's a table.
Sure. We try and squeeze people in all the time.
Uh-huh. And then one thing that's really nice is the cellar bar is open until midnight, Thursday, Friday?
Well, it's open until the kitchen closes,
Okay.
on business, yeah.
And does that mean food as well as
the
drinks?
Kitchen right now closes at about 9 o'clock Sunday through Thursday, and then on the weekends whenever, till 10. And if we're still busy, we'll still keep
it. And then I assume you'll stay open later as the days get longer, we get into the
As we get into spring,
season.
We change our hours Sunday through Thursday. We stay open a little bit later.
Okay, and the phone number?
963-2233.
That's area code 707-963-2233. Oh, yeah. Like and one more question for you, Rob. For somebody who's insecure about wine, what is just the most comfortable, way to say, hey, I want a wine recommendation? How do you ask your server without, sort of apologizing for it?
I think you just ask it, and I think that
I'd like a recommendation.
I would like a recommendation, and if people can articulate what they like and don't like, that goes a long ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks so much to both of you coming over on a Sunday night. I'm really glad to get you both on. I love Martini House.
Thank you.
And look forward
Thank
to my
you.
Next meal.
Thanks
Have a great winter.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Meet me here next week at 7 for another episode of Mouthful. The Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. And between now and then, enjoy this political honeymoon while it lasts.
The piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. And you can't find your waitress with a Geiger counter. And she hates you and your friends, and you just can't get served without her.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Dinner,